Good morning.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the court. I am Michael Kleiss, and I am representing Helicopter Association International, which is the petitioner in this case. Your Honors, I've reserved 4 minutes for rebuttal. Your Honors, we seek an order from this court holding unlawful, setting aside, and vacating the Federal Aviation Administration's rule entitled New York North Shore Helicopter Route. We believe that this is an unprecedented rule that imposes general operational restrictions on all helicopter pilots to use a lengthy required route based solely on complaints about helicopter noise.
Point is that the agency had no authority to promulgate this rule.
Well, Your Honor, we do question whether the agency had authority to promulgate the rule, and even if it did, Your Honor, our view is that the rule is unlawful for several reasons, including that it's not based on substantial evidence, that the FAA has failed to examine the record and articulate satisfactory explanations for its rule, that it compromises safety, which is the FAA's main directive, that it's an arbitrary departure from the usual practice of the agency, and also that it violates the Regulatory Flexibility Act. So it's really a two-pronged argument, lack of authority, or if there is authority, then we don't think it was properly exercised in this instance.
So what, on a lack of authority issue, it seems that the agencies cited two different provisions, one that gives them the ability to protect individuals and property on the ground, the other that gives them specific noise regulation authority. Those seem broad grants of authority.
Well, certainly they are broadly worded, Your Honor, but we don't think that they are without limitation. As the Supreme Court said in the City of Burbank case, the Congress did not leave the FAA to act at large on noise. It did provide standards under those statutes for the FAA to follow, and particularly with respect to Section 44715 of Title 49 U.S. Code, we believe that the legislative history that's cited in our brief shows that that provision, the one concerning the regulation of noise, applies only to the certification of aircraft and aircraft equipment and does not authorize the FAA to imply flight-based restrictions solely on the basis of noise.
So the text just says regulations to control and abate aircraft noise and sonic boom, right?
The text does say that, Your Honor, but there are at least two sub-provisions in there that refer to regulations governing certificates.
Right.
And the legislative history that we cite shows that Congress really was looking at three different levels of control of noise. The first is through regulations governing certification of aircraft equipment and aircraft themselves. Secondly, as the government points out in its brief, limitations on operations themselves, and thirdly, limitations on ground use, so that it would be compatible with the nearby noise.
So but helicopters are just flying over and making just unbelievable noise, and you can't sleep, you cannot live.
But Your Honor,
the FAA is powerless.
No, the FAA is not powerless, but it can and has in fact regulated aircraft equipment and engines so that they're quieter aircraft now, and the legislative history that we cite shows that of those three approaches that I just described, the one that's addressed in the statute that got enacted is simply the regulation of or the certification of aircraft and aircraft equipment.
I think your answer to my hypothetical was tough if you live in that area. right?
I beg your pardon, Your Honor?
Tough if you're living in an area where, again, I know there's, this is a separate party argument about the degree of noise here, but if it's just unbearable noise to live in a place, you're saying the FAA has no authority to do anything about that other than, I suppose, you know, for future manufactured engines to change the standards for those.
Well, that's correct, Your Honor. That under the no statutory authority argument.
I think that is your position.
That is our position.
Is there any agency, anybody that has state or local government that has any authority whatsoever to control aircraft noise?
Under a separate provision of Section 44.715, EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency, is given authority to propose regulations
to the FAA.
And then the FAA either has to take those regulations under consideration and adopt them or explain why it's not adopted.
My understanding is there's a good deal of control over noise, but it deals with airports. And the control factor there is the FAA kind of oversees it because they have grant authority. And they can approve local restrictions or not. But what we're dealing with here now are helicopters. And helicopters are not restricted to landing or taking off at airports, unlike passenger jets and some of the other noisy jets. Are helicopters ranked the way that other planes are, as stage one, stage two, stage three noise?
I believe they are, Your Honor. They're not.
You don't know?
Not positive about that, but.
The 65 decibel level that the FAA relied upon here is the standard, is it not?
Yes, Your Honor.
For airports as well.
Yes, Your Honor. Yeah. And that standard is a standard that was not reached here, as the study that the FAA commissioned the Volpe Center to conduct shows. Your Honors, that study examined helicopter flights over the busiest holiday weekends during one year, the Memorial Day weekend and the July 4th weekend. So you would think that would be it does present sort of a worst case scenario of how bad the noise situation
might
be.
I haven't looked at that study. Is that a day-night average?
It's a day-night average, yes, Your Honor. And what the study found, and it examined an area that covered a total of about 6 million residents on the North Shore of Long Island, and none of them were affected by any decibel level higher than 45 decibels, which is actually four times lower than the 65 decibel level that the EPA or that the FAA supposedly uses as its level of significance. So what that shows, Your Honor, is that on this record, there really is not an evidentiary basis, no substantial evidence in the record to back up the complaints from the residents that about helicopter noise. Because
the FAA says it's not limited to acting only when that decibel is reached.
But Your Honor, that is the standard that the FAA has set.
And your argument, as I understand it, is 44.715. It's just regarding certification, all right?
Yes, Your Honor.
And so that necessarily narrows any authority that the FAA had under 44.103.
Yes, Your
Honor. That's your argument.
Yes, Your Honor.
But that's just a carve out under your interpretation as to certification. It doesn't say anything about all the other things that 44.103 is talking about, where the FAA has this general authority.
But it's a general authority that the touchstones of its authority under that provision are safety and efficiency of aircraft. And this rule here.
The FAA responds, we're getting into the merits of the rule now, they respond that they have addressed those matters to their satisfaction. It's not as though they didn't consider them. You may not be satisfied with their evaluation, but they did consider safety.
They say they did consider safety, yes, Your Honor, but the entire impetus behind the rule was noise complaints alone, not safety and efficiency.
But it's not that noise necessarily cancels out any consideration of safety, is it?
No, it's that's right. Not, Your Honor. Right. But on the other hand, that's the broader statutory provision that that you just cited, 40.40103. Mm-hmm. It doesn't say anything about noise.
It doesn't mention.
But Your Honor,
regulations on the flight of aircraft to or for protecting individuals and property on the ground, and there are several ways to read that, and the agency has taken a broad reading of it. And why is that impermissible?
Well, it's impermissible because in carrying it out in this case, the agency hasn't followed the precepts of the Administrative Procedure Act.
All right, that's the merits on the rule itself. We're just at the authority issue. You raised two basic claims. One, the FAA had no authority to promulgate this rule, and that's what we've been talking about.
Yes, Your Honor.
All right. So would you agree they do have this general authority?
I don't agree. We still don't agree that the general authority extends that far, and I think it's reflected in the fact that over the history of the existence of this provision, the FAA has never issued a regulation solely based on noise complaints that imposes operational constraints on aircraft. They have to go back in the past 45 years, only three times can they identify situations where the FAA has even come close.
Well, they got complaints and said we can't do anything about it. They just haven't gotten the complaints, right?
Well, I think they may have gotten complaints in those instances. In at least one of them, the Federal Register notice shows that they followed through and took measurements of their own to verify the complaints. But each of those situations involved some very unique set of circumstances.
Has the FAA ever denied the authority? You say
that's right. Yeah.
They ever denied over those 45 years that they have authority to regulate this kind of situation?
I understand that in practice they have said as a general matter we don't regulate noise. We regulate.
You said that in your comments to the agency, to the rule. You said that in the rulemaking.
Yes, Your Honor.
On page JA-77, but you've cited no authority for that proposition.
Yes, Your Honor. Well, that's just based on our experience with the agency over the years.
They made some findings here that Long Island in this area is unique.
Well, I don't read those findings as meaning that it's unique in the sense that relief is justified here. The way I read those findings is that it's the area is appropriate for the kinds of measures that the FAA says it wants to impose. Those unique findings don't show that a legally cognizable problem exists to begin with.
Isn't it unique or maybe close to unique in the sense of commercial helicopter traffic in a heavily populated area in the country?
Your Honor, I think that there are a lot of areas in the country where there's commercially heavy helicopter traffic, and one of our concerns here, of course, is that if they can impose this kind of restriction here,
they can
do it anywhere.
Anywhere where there's a lot of noise.
Anywhere where there's noise from helicopters and there's some waterway alongside, so that you can send your helicopters out over the water instead of having them go over land.
So getting to your arbitrary and capricious argument, your view is that unless noise rises to the decibel level of 65 or over, the FAA acts arbitrarily if it regulates noise?
Yes, Your Honor. That's the standard that it has in place. And it hasn't explained... And it hasn't explained here why that standard shouldn't apply, even though in the preamble to the final rule, it identifies that standard.
Well, it has explained it to the extent that it says it got 300 complaints.
Well, certainly, Your Honor, but the numerosity of complaints doesn't rise to the level of a legally cognizable problem unless there's some law that's being violated. And there's no law or standard here that the FAA has shown that the complainants have identified that's being violated.
May I ask you, I'm a little bit confused about the decibel level measure. I was looking at page JA-70 of the appendix, which is the preamble to the rule. And I may have been under a misimpression, but maybe you can straighten it out. Is the FAA saying in the text, in the left-hand column, to be the second full paragraph, are they saying that the route that they're now requiring will have a 45 decibel level and therefore won't impact the homes? Do you see what I'm saying?
Well, yes, Your Honor. We think that is the upshot of what they've found in this study. I don't think that's what they're saying there. I think what they were addressing, and the reason they commissioned the study, was to see whether the use of this route, which at that point was being voluntarily complied with, right. 85% voluntary compliance level, whether it would in fact create a problematic noise level.
Right.
And
if I can just finish, the 45 decibel figure that's contained in footnote 7 at the end of footnote 7, which you were complaining about, is the level that is measured under the voluntary system that they're making mandatory, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. And what is your complaint about that study, because it was done on Memorial Day on July 4th?
Well, we don't really have a complaint about the study. We have a complaint that the FAA, in imposing this rule, is ignoring the study, because their own study showed that the sound levels did not rise to a level that warranted restriction under their own standard.
But that's on the route that they're now making mandatory, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
So why... I'm a little bit lost. Maybe I'm not understanding it, but if it rose to 60, over 65, that would be a reason not to mandate the route. If it's under 65, that's a reason why this route is an acceptable one in terms of noise.
That is a reason why this route would be an acceptable one, but it also shows that there was no problem to begin with, because while this study was being conducted, all of these complaints were coming in about helicopter noise. So they go out and conduct the study, and the study disproves the thrust of the complaints, which is that they're too noisy. The study shows that even on the two busiest holiday weekends of the summer, the noise level doesn't rise above 45 decibels, and 65 decibels is the level of concern. So when FAA, the rule relies entirely on these complaints that FAA had been receiving, and yet when those complaints were tested against FAA's own measurements in the Volpe study, the result was a level of noise considerably lower than the standard that FAA itself says it will follow. And so we think that it's arbitrary and capricious for the agency to announce one standard, it's 65 decibels, but then to impose a rule based on complaints that don't rise to that level of noise.
All right. Why don't we hear from the government? We'll give you some time on rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor.
May it please the court, Edward Himmelfarb with the Department of Justice. There are four basic aspects of this final rule that make it a reasonable response to the problem. First, it's a very minor change. Second, it's temporary. It expires in 15 months from now. Three, it uses an existing solution that the helicopter operators are very actively involved in creating, the voluntary route. And fourth, it's based on a full rulemaking record containing approximately 900 comments, 300 of which were from residents complaining about the noise levels. So that's the basic outline of why this thing's reasonable. Now, I want to say one thing about the interpretation of 40103 and 44715. This is a longstanding interpretation of the FAA that those two statutes allow regulation of noise on the ground. They go back, as Mr. Klaus said, they go back to the 1960s. There are three special air traffic rules that were issued under them. Actually, there's a current advisory circular, which we did not mention in the brief. If I may want to file it afterwards as a 28-J letter, but this is a longstanding interpretation. The FAA has a wide variety of statutes under which it can regulate noise. The FAA kind of characterizes this as six different areas, two of which are the ones that are primarily relied on by the petitioner's brief here. Those are airport and vicinity noise. The FAA has issued regulations under those statutes, parts 150 and 161. Those really have nothing to do with this case. We're not talking about airport vicinity here. The westernmost part of this mandatory route is 20 nautical miles outside of LaGuardia Airport. We're talking about way beyond the bounds of the airport and its vicinity. So those statutes don't apply here. The regulations don't apply here. There are two areas in which the FAA regulates noise that are related to the environment. One is grant aid program. The other is National Environmental Policy Act. The Volpe study that we discuss in this case was done to determine whether there were adverse environmental effects of this proposed rule. The conclusion was no, there are not adverse environmental effects to the proposed rule. But that's another area that does not directly relate to this case either. Now, the fifth of those six categories is regulation of the noise from the aircraft themselves, the stage one, stage two, stage three, and so on. That's basically the same statutes, but the statutes also, as I said, there's a longstanding FAA interpretation that these two statutes give it a sort of a residual authority to regulate noise on the ground outside of the airport context. It doesn't happen very often, it's not needed very often, but in the case where it's needed and it's documented that it's needed like this one, the FAA has that authority.
So where does the 65 decibels come from?
The 65 decibels has to do with the environment, the vicinity of the airport, land use restrictions in that area, whether the land use is compatible with the being near an airport. So that's a different question. It's a different statute. That's a different set of regulations.
I'll ask you the same question. The route that you've mandated, that the FAA has mandated, had the study that's listed on page whatever, footnote 7, that says they found 45 decibel.
Yes.
That's along that route while it was voluntary?
Well, they were mapping. As I understand what they were doing, they were trying to map the noise from aircraft, for reported aircraft in that area, which are primarily helicopters, and try to figure out how that affected the surrounding communities, what the population was that was affected by different levels, decibel levels of sound. So this was before the final rule went into effect, so it was to some extent based on a pre-existing voluntary route where the petitioner claims that 85%
Let me just stop you.
I'm not sure I'm answering your question.
Oh, go ahead.
No, I'm not sure I'm answering. If I'm not answering, I'll try again.
Here's the question that I may also misunderstand. The 300 comments or complaints or whatever, were they related to the voluntary route?
Yes. Because
the noise level on the voluntary route?
That's right, Your Honor. The voluntary route was in effect starting in 2008. The notice of proposed rulemaking is, I believe, 2010. So it was the voluntary route was in effect at the time.
Okay. There were complaints about the noise along the route that you mandated. Is that what you're saying?
Well, the route that we mandated is the same as the route that was set up voluntarily. Right. It's the same route.
Okay.
Yeah, but you see the conundrum. In other words, if the voluntary route caused 300 complaints, and now you're mandating it,
right?
Where's the relief?
Well, here's the situation. The voluntary route is set up so that people fly along the North Shore, about a mile offshore. That means that you're allowed to deviate for safety-related purposes, including weather or if you are trying to reach your destination. So for the most part, if you're following the voluntary route, you're flying offshore. But there are 15% approximately of operations that are not following this route. They're not complying with the route. So those people may be flying directly over land. They could be flying anywhere. They're not restricted to the water the way the people who are complying with it. So when you...
Well, the FAA agreed that approximately 85% of the helicopter pilots are following the voluntary...
For purposes of the rule, they did. They, what they said was they were unable to tell exactly how many,
right.
But the petitioner claims that it's 85, and the FAA has no basis for disputing that. So
were the complaints about the 15% that were not flying offshore?
Your Honor, to be quite candid here, it's not clear. They're complaining about helicopter noise. The chances are, if their property is off the beach, they're not being disrupted by people who are flying offshore.
How far offshore?
A mile. So I can't stand here and tell you that any particular commenter or the entire class of commenters are commenting about noise from any specific helicopter, but one would assume, based on the fact that they're on land, that they're complaining about helicopters that are flying over land. That's all we can tell you.
Okay. The people who are not flying, presumably, the voluntary route.
Yes, unless, of course, and this is
the weather.
Unless they're deviating because of weather, or unless they have the people who are complaining happen to be in the precise location that the helicopters turn off to reach their destination, which they're allowed to do.
Are there height restrictions as well?
Yes, there's a suggested minimum altitude of 2,500 feet over sea level. That again is subject to deviation for weather reasons, for example. You know, that's the most likely reason you'd have a deviation from that, but as I understand it, ordinarily helicopters are expected to fly above 1,000 feet. This is the voluntary route was an effort to get people to move higher up to reduce the noise, and if the final rule goes into effect, well, the final rule is upheld, the non-complying operators will similarly be forced to move up and out over the water, and that's
why is this temporary?
Because the FAA wanted to evaluate whether it works or not. The temporary nature of it came up during the rulemaking process. It was not originally proposed as a temporary regulation. They proposed to make it permanent, and during the course of the rulemaking proceedings, they decided that it would be better just to test it for a couple of years. And they announced in the final rule that if they wanted to make it permanent, they would go through notice and comment rulemaking again, or if they wanted to modify it, they would go through notice and comment rulemaking again.
So I gather these helicopters, do they file any type of flight plan?
I don't think helicopters fly. There's right. The FAA has a published route that
right.
So
you follow the route, and the pilot makes decisions on deviation.
The pilot's in charge here.
That's right. Yeah.
And that goes to their concerns about enforcement, too, because...
And about safety.
About safety. The pilot has to make the judgment about what's safe and what's not safe. And the FAA is generally going to accept that. And what the FAA said about enforcement in the final rule is that they're looking for patterns of deviations, not individual deviations, because a pattern of deviations might indicate that the pilot is actually not following the rule about when you can deviate. And I understand that in the past several months there have been some pilots who have been counseled by the FAA, but there have been no enforcement actions taken at this point, 9 months into the 24-month period.
Counseled because they're violating it?
Well, because I guess I think that there is some question of whether they were following it or not. And I know the FAA has been working with the ERHC, the affiliate of the petitioner, and representatives of the FAA have gone to public meetings to talk about with the operators and with the public who have also been invited to some of these meetings. So there's this kind of continuing outreach to see how this is working and to see what people's responses are and to advise them.
And what was the theory where the study was looking at these two holiday weekends, which arguably the record suggests are probably the noisiest?
They're definitely the noisiest. Yeah, they were looking to see what the noise levels were there. And again, that was primarily for environmental purposes, to see whether there was a substantial environmental effect, which would lead the FAA to have to go through the wider statutory process.
I mean, environmental effect, that includes public health as well as the birds in the air.
Right, but the rule itself is not based on that type of environmental effect.
In other words, I'm just getting at the point that maybe the two holiday weekends are the worst time of the year, but
they are certainly the worst time of the year.
Fine if it's just voluntary.
I'm sorry?
In other words, those two weekends may be the worst period of the year, and the rest of the time, the voluntary system's okay. You see what I'm getting at? In other words, you take the worst scenario.
Yes.
And you make a rule mandatory, even
yes.
though the worst scenario is 4 days.
Right. But you know, Your Honor, you know, we thought about this a little bit after, just recently, and nobody raised that argument during the rulemaking process. Nobody said, hey, you know, this is a busy season, just make it mandatory for two weekends a year.
All right, let me shift to the regulatory flexibility.
Okay.
I know counsel didn't mention it during his argument, but not the fuel cost, but the number of small businesses. Now, the FAA said, well, this association has 35 members, so we'll use that number.
Right.
Is that the way it works? In other words, suppose, just hypothetically, there were 500 helicopter associations, but only this association is before the agency. You wouldn't look at what's happening to not only their 35 members, but to all of the other helicopter members?
Well, I think the idea was that this is the large membership organization for
right.
helicopter operators in this region, and you know, that was a way of estimating, you know.
So when they came up and said, no, it's really more like 100,
right.
they didn't offer any evidence.
No, they just, that was, in fact, they still refer to it as their estimate. They don't really have a basis for the estimate either. Now, maybe they're right, but there's no way of knowing. And you know, 35 is certainly a hard number. We know that.
All right. Anything else?
No, thank you, Your Honor. If there are no further questions.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Counsel for petitioner.
Your Honor, I think that Mr. Himmelfarb's comments concerning the uncertainties about the level of compliance, the 85% versus the 15%, are telling here. We don't really know about that 15% what the non-compliance consisted of. They could have been flying the route in its entirety as required by the final rule. But then just deviated off for reasons that are not covered under the final rule. So it may well have been that there is actually greater use. There was greater use of the rule of the of the route on a voluntary basis than is reflected in that 85% number. But Your Honor, the point is, or part of our point is, that if there was at least 85% voluntary compliance, and if the public comments, or the, not the public comments, the 300 public complaints were directed, occurred despite that level of compliance with the rule and despite the low level of noise that was found, then where's the substantial evidence to justify imposing the final rule and saying that there's excessive noise? We just don't understand.
I don't follow the logic there. I assume with the final rule, to the extent it's followed, there'll be less noise. And if that turns out not to be the case in this temporary period, then they'll probably search for a different solution.
Well, at most, Your Honor, it'll be 15% less noise.
But house, that's going to help.
The complaints. The point is, Your Honor, that the complaints keep coming, the agency has a standard, and the complaints don't rise to the level of the noise standard that the agency finds significant. So, we don't see why the rule is justified. And then on the Regulatory Flexibility Act, I think the number of that's a good point about the number of small business entities affected. The rulemaking record here shows that the FAA sort of stumbled its way to that 35 figure in the preamble to the notice of proposed rulemaking, where the FAA first made its certification that no Reg Flex Act analysis was necessary. It was based on a mere 5 operators, and they weren't even operators flying the North Shore. They were operators engaged in the air tour business back in New York City. So at least during the comment period, when it was pointed out to them that that number was absurdly low and used the wrong group of businesses, at least they then decided to change their tune and go with the perceived number of members that one of the trade associations had. But I think that that still does not account for the fact that there may be and likely are other operators out there who do not happen to be members of the one trade association.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
We'll take the case under advisement.